It's time for Language Matters with Nat Benchley, WHDD's language guy.
We're going to talk about some language matters because language matters for the moment. A brief aside. You know I do harp in these columns about good writing and even sometimes good speaking. And I realize that really only people who already care about these matters are likely to be listening or paying attention. And it should be obvious by now that we're still trying to shake down just what it is we're after, because I have admitted that many of my favorite rules and proscriptions have been shunted aside by common usage. Emphasis on the common. But I think that possibly the greatest public service a column like this can offer is a constant drumbeat against the proliferation of mundane, boring, bad, or unintelligible writing. Indeed, only interested parties and gotcha gang members will be listening initially, but there is a tiny hope that if they hear a topic which assaults them in their quotidian life, they may find a way to alert others to a potential fix. And to that end, I would like to share a neologism, a new construction, which I believe I have just created, to describe many of the abuses of the language which we here target. I call them egregia, for they are, in many cases, egregious instances of bad English. Feel free to use my new word. And possibly, just possibly, maybe someone who has an inkling that better writing can improve their life will begin to pay attention to some of these issues. My greatest hope would be to find someone who suddenly understood how clean, understandable, interesting writing can still stand out above the clatter of everyday blather and prattle. Maybe someone will read something and understand why it's better written than other postings, or maybe they'll get a positive feedback from a job application or a letter asking for assistance over which they slaved to improve the clarity. Perhaps they will see some of the redundancies we mentioned and understand why they make writing less crisp, less clear. Maybe they will eschew egregia. Turning from egregiously wrong to today's topic, write but infuriating. Now, we've all cursed written English as capricious and condemned American pronunciation rules as but half-truths as best. Examples and practice always seem better than just studying worn and obsolete phonetic guides. So in the spirit of public service, and to follow WHDD's mission of slapping you with the fish, or was that giving you the fish, we offer here a taste of one of the great works of the English language, written, of course, by a foreigner who had been forced to learn English as a second, at least, language. You may recall that I recently referred to the irritating irregularity of our English language. I had once thought of trying to write a song which a foreign student might have trouble singing because of the differences in pronunciations with similar spellings. Remember homophones? I was thinking of an ESL version of Monty Python's wonderful Let's Call the Whole Thing Off skit. But then I ran across an extant work which made my efforts totally superfluous. I speak of a poem called The Chaos. It was first published in 1920 as an appendix to a work called Drop Your Foreign Accent, and it was written by a Dutchman named Gerard Nolst Trenite. It is the most succinct, even though lengthy, as many as 274 lines, summation of the vagaries and infuriating inconsistencies of English that I have ever seen. At that length, it defies reading here, and at its level of complexity, it defies reading well anywhere. So I challenge, urge all, both of our listeners, to find a way to go online and seek it out. Usually typing in the title to your search engine should find it, and certainly with the author's name you will get to it. Beware, there are several different versions out there. I believe I have found the complete 274-line version through the Journal of Simplified Spelling, but I'm willing to sit corrected. The Chaos, Gerard Nolst Trenite. If anyone seeks it out and gets frustrated, they can contact the station and we can provide either a link or a printed copy, said he, volunteering the station's services. And I heartily recommend having a printed copy because The Chaos is as much a visual exercise as it is oral. If I get it right, I can recite some of the verses for you, but you will not see the maddening variations in spelling I'm having to navigate. It's a wonderful exercise in oratory and diction to try to read the poem aloud. You may, for the moment, have to imagine the words I'm spouting and see them in your mind's eye page. After trying these verses, one Frenchman said he'd prefer 6 months at hard labor to reading six lines aloud. But here I go with several months hard labor. It begins, "Dearest creature in creation, studying English pronunciation, I will teach you in my verse, sounds like corpse, core, horse, and worse. I will keep you, Susie, busy, make your head with heat grow dizzy. Tear and I, your dress you'll tear. Queer, fair seer, hear my prayer. Pray console your loving poet, make my coat look new, dear, sew it. Just compare your heart here and heard, dyes and diet, lord and word. Sword and sword retain in Britain, mind the latter how it's written. Maid has not the sound of bad, say said pay paid, laid but plaid. Now I surely will not plague you with such words as vague and ague, but be careful how you speak, say gush, bush, stake, streak, break and bleak. Previous precious fuchsia via, recipe pipe, studding sail choir. Woven oven how and low, script receipt, shoe poem toe. Say expecting fraud and trickery, daughter laughter and terpsichore. Branch ranch measles, topsails aisles, missiles similes reviles." Eliding several verses here, we jump to "Hue but hug and hood but hoot, buoyant minute but minute. Say abscission with precision, now position and transition. Would it tally with my rhyme if I mentioned paradigm? Tuppence, threepence, teas are easy, but cease, crease, grease and greasy. Cornice, nice, valise, revise, rabies, but lullabies. Of such puzzling words as nauseous, rhyming well with cautious, tortious, you'll envelop lists, I hope, in a linen envelope. Would you like some more? You'll have it. Affidavit, David, davit. To abjure, to perjure, shake. Does not sound like check, but ache. Liberty Library heave in heaven. Rachel Locke moustache 11. We say hallowed, but aloud. People leopard, toad, but vowed. Mark the difference, moreover, between mover, plover, dover. Leeches, breeches, wise, precise, chalice, but police and lice. Camel, constable, unstable, principal, disciple, label. Petal, penal, and canal, wait, surmise, plate, promise, pal. Suit, sweet, ruin, circuit, conduit. Rhyme with shirk it and beyond it. But it is not hard to tell why it's Paul, Mall, but pell-mell." Enough. I spare you here Dr. Nolte's Trinite's conclusion at the end of many pages of such madness. That pleasure is for you to discover as you try to untangle your tongue. Dr. Gerard Nolte's Trinite was a Dutch observer of English who died in 1946. Now, none of the reference sources I have found could tell me just how much of his hair was left after he'd spent all that time compiling this madness of English. But it is a wonderful read. Jill, care to commentariate?
Just for a moment. If you are not sure, if you are not sure how to pronounce one of these words, all you have to do is go back to the rhyme. But I got into just the fourth stanza where it's say, said, pay, paid, laid, but, yeah. Plaid. And I have always, apparently, I didn't plaid bad. I thought you bade someone farewell, but apparently you don't.
Well, I think that's one of those that can go either way.
Okay.
I bade him farewell, I bade him farewell. Obviously, he chose certain pronunciations here to emphasize his points.
But again, if you're ever in a coil about how to pronounce R-I-B-A-L-D, according to the poem, it's ribald, not ribald.
Because it rhymes with?
It's nibbled.
And again, even many of the ones he chooses in here can go one or two different ways. And there are.
Listen, if you've ever had to read English lit or just know anything about your British families.
Yes. Oh, well.
Yeah, there's one classic that takes you down every single time, and that's the spelling versus the pronunciation, family name Chumley.
Oh,
you
yeah,
know, and it happens to be in this poem,
mm-hmm.
But anybody reading it would be absolutely forgiven to think that it was basically Chumundley.
Well, there are a couple of others in there too. I'm not sure whether he uses things like Worcester and some of the others, but those again are largely British. But
Yeah, but it's Worcester, Mass.
Theoretically, the language.
Yeah.
Well, in the Russians are coming. They had the Russians on the sub looking at the map of Gloucester Island and saying, is here Gloucester Island, for sure, Gloucester.
And you have to, I mean, it's one of the things that shows you that language comes into consciousness at the same time as you are, depending on where you are physically located on the planet. We have a running joke here about how I cannot pronounce a single place in New York State properly.
Well, and there are others. I mean, I had a friend years ago who used to pronounce the word B-U-R-Y, which I say is Barry. She always said Bury, and I'm not sure where it came from. I know she learned English as a second language, but that seemed to me a regional thing. I'm sure there are people in Missouri or someplace like that who say Bury instead of Barry.
Right.
And you can't say it's wrong. It's just regional.
Yep. And it rhymes with fury.
Yeah. Well, on to our onomatomania now. With thanks to our astute listener who sent us a deck of knowledge cards from Dr. Samuel Johnson's Dictionary of 1755, we offer here our first old but useful word of today, huggermugger. And it means, according to Dr. J, secrecy, a byplace. His example being, now hold in huggermugger in their hand, and all the rest do rob of goods and land, from Edmund Spenser. Also, I happen to like the word womble, to roll with nausea or sickness, said often of a wombling stomach, which somehow always leads me back to the Jabberwocky. 'Twas brillig, and the slithy toves did gyre and gimble in the wabe. Old mimsy were the borogoves, and the mome raths outgrabe. I'm glad I oiled my tongue this morning. And finally, because I think I'll need it, another favorite word, salubrious. It's an adjective meaning health-giving or healthy. We speak often of salubrious weather, salubrious company. So there you have it.
Beware the Jabberwock, my son. This is Nat Benchley with Language Matters.
Because language matters.
You've been listening to Language Matters with Nat Benchley, WHTD's language guy, and Jill Goodman. Thank you.